Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 364 to close at 16,151. S&P 500 down 48 at 1,890. NASDAQ Composite down 159 at 4,526. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 4 basis points at 2.07%. Oil up 10 cents at $30.54 per barrel. Gold up $7 at $1,094.50 per ounce. Well, the U.S. markets started trading higher in the morning, but the gains faded fast. And this has been the pattern in four of the last five trading sessions. Early gains collapsing into the close. The next real level of support in the Dow, around 16,000, more specifically 15,981, the lows from September 28th. Then the more significant level of support is at 15,370. That's the low from August 24th, back when China was melting down. By the way, the Shanghai Composite Index closed down 2.4% today, falling below the 3,000 level for the first time since the peak of the August sell-off. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to be rushing down to the August lows of 15,370. I would anticipate markets trying to rally at some point, just because the carnage has been brutal to start the year. Now, remember, December 29th, the Dow high was 17,750. So we're down about 1,650. That means we're closing in on a 10% correction over the course of about 2 weeks. You can't really call it a crash, but it is enough to make plenty of people nervous. Yesterday, we talked about all the research analysts from the different banks saying, sell everything or sell on rallies. Well, this kind of recommendation might be a contrarian indicator, or it might be headline-grabbing hogwash, or it might be a self-fulfilling prophecy. Moving down the trading chain, RIAs, Registered Investment Advisors, have been making portfolio changes with more likely on the way. The main trend, reducing exposure to anticipated rising interest rates and the market volatility that could result. TD Ameritrade's institutional RIA sentiment survey found that 79% of RIAs reported adjusting asset allocations to accommodate what is expected to be a rising interest rate environment in the U.S. And while it can be tempting to panic and run, that is not the correct answer. Before you enter any trade, you should set your exit. If you have been in a position for a while, you should occasionally reset your exit strategy. If your exit strategy is not hit, you sit tight. If your exit strategy is hit, you are out, and you don't have to think about it. Either way, it should be an automatic decision. If emotion gets involved, you are not doing it right. If you are kicked out of a position, you look for a re-entry, and you only re-enter with an exit strategy in place. Lather, rinse, repeat. And if you can't figure this part out, you really should not be in the stock market. Go play the lottery or something. You know, actually, that might explain a lot. Late yesterday, the American Petroleum Institute reported oil inventories unexpectedly fell last week, sliding 3.9 million barrels to 480 million. This morning, crude futures moved higher. It didn't last long, though. Mid-morning, the Energy Information Administration reported U.S. crude inventories rose by 234,000 barrels last week. Now, that was smaller than the 2 million barrel build that analysts had forecast, but it still, the inventories grew. That brought total U.S. crude stocks to 482.6 million barrels, keeping them near levels not seen for this time of year in at least the last 80 years. Inventories of gasoline, that's the same stuff that crude oil ultimately gets refined into, increased by 8.4 million barrels in the week to January 8th, following a 10.6 million barrel build the previous week. That's according to the latest data from the Energy Information Administration. This was much bigger than the 1.6 million barrel build that analysts had projected. So, crude oil started the session higher, dropped, then eked out a very small gain of 10 cents to settle at $30.54 a barrel. Now, some of the alarmist forecasts are calling for $20 or even $10 oil in the near future. But most of the forecasts are calling for the average price of oil for 2016 around $45 to $50 a barrel, which would mean an increase of 50 to 60% from current levels. We know that $20 or $30 oil is unsustainable for a large part of the oil patch, and so we have seen lower investment, and we will eventually see lower production. But the real trick is how fast or slow that plays out, and how much damage is done to the oil infrastructure between now and then. Federal Reserve published its beige book today. This is an anecdotal look at the economy provided by the 12 Fed districts. The report comes 2 weeks ahead of the Fed's next policy committee meeting. Modest growth was reported in 9 of its 12 districts. Labor markets were described as tight or tightening in 4 districts, but overall wage pressures remained subdued. 9 of the 12 districts reported growth in consumer spending through the holiday season. Nearly half of the 12 districts reported overall declines in manufacturing activity due to the strong dollar and weak demand from overseas. Inflation remained minimal during the reporting period. In other words, why did the Fed hike rates in December? Anheuser-Busch InBev started offering bonds that will back its takeover of SAB Miller in a sale that's likely to stretch into Europe and could become the biggest corporate debt offering on record. The brewer may sell about $25 billion of dollar-denominated bonds in as many as 8 parts, maturities ranging from 3 to 30 years. The company has lined up $75 billion of loans to help fund the takeover, and it's expected to tap debt markets in other regions later. Apple is apparently considering a purchase of Time Warner. And if you think that Apple is serious about finally launching Apple TV in a big way, well, it makes sense. Time Warner includes Turner, HBO, and Warner. Now I'll break it down further, and those 3 segments include CNN, the CW, Turner Broadcasting, TNT, TBS, and all the original content and syndicated programming that flows from there. Also, HBO, New Line Cinema, Castle Rock Entertainment, DC Comics, and Warner Brothers itself, which includes about 100 years of history in film and television and interactive games based on some of those films. And while certain parts may be more attractive than the whole, Time Warner has a market cap of $56 billion, which is still pocket change for Apple. There are a couple of problems. First, Time Warner is not for sale. But activists had been urging Time Warner to spin off some assets. Second, there might be other potential buyers, including AT&T, DirecTV, Amazon, or Google. MetLife says it's considering spinning off its retail life and annuity business in the United States because regulations enforced after the financial crisis have put it under financial pressure. 2 years ago, the Financial Stability Oversight Council named MetLife a systemically important non-bank financial institution, or SIFI. Now, this required more capital to be set aside as a cushion against a substantial decline in financial markets. So MetLife claimed they're not too big to fail, and to prove it, they sued the U.S. government. Now, this is the same MetLife that runs TV ads touting how they are a global conglomerate with hundreds of millions of clients and trillions in insurance. But if they are labeled systemically important, well, they'd have to hold some extra capital. MetLife says they don't need the extra capital because everything is fine. The government says they should have the extra capital, you know, kind of like insurance in case something goes wrong. The California Air Resources Board has rejected Volkswagen's plan to fix 2-liter diesel cars equipped with software that allows them to emit up to 40 times legally allowable pollution. The move turns up the pressure on VW before talks this week between CEO Matthias Mueller and the EPA's Gina McCarthy. Ford announced a special dividend, the automaker announcing a 25-cent per share special dividend in addition to its regular 15-cent per share dividend. According to Ford, the billion-dollar supplemental dividend reflects the company's strong financial performance in 2015 and robust cash and liquidity levels. The company also announced it expected to earn $10 billion in 2016, but that's just about the same as 2015. General Motors raised its earnings projections for 2016 by 25 cents a share, increased the size of its share buyback, and boosted the dividend to start the year. GM forecast adjusted earnings per share of $5.25 to $5.75 for the year. Anticipating better profits, GM's board raised the share buyback plan to $9 billion from $5 billion, boosted the dividend to 38 cents a share from 36 cents per share. The National Football League is headed back to Los Angeles. After 2 decades without a team in the nation's second-largest media market, NFL owners voted late yesterday to move the St. Louis Rams back to the city they called home for nearly 50 years. The plan is to build a $2 billion stadium in Inglewood. Price could go up to $2.6 billion. It would be on the site of the Hollywood Park horse track. Still haven't seen final figures on how much of that will be taxpayer-financed, but maybe Los Angeles should buy a lottery ticket. NFL owners also gave the San Diego Chargers the right to join the Rams if the two franchises can work out a deal to share the planned stadium. The Chargers have 2 months to decide whether they want to move to Los Angeles for the 2016 season, 1 year to decide whether they'll move there at all. The bigger mystery is where the Oakland Raiders will play next season, and the possibilities are seemingly endless, but may point to a choice between staying in Oakland, where the lease on their stadium has expired, or moving to San Antonio. The answer will depend on which city offers the most cash. Dow Industrials closed down 364 at 16,151, S&P 500 down 48, NASDAQ down 159 in another rough day of trading. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com. You'll find text, audio, author interviews, a free podcast, and much more at eatthebankers.com. That's eatthebankers.com.